"Away from civilization," said William scornfully. "Huh, it's a dotty subject."
"Old Frenchy always gives dotty subjects for essays," said Ginger.
"Old French is against civilization," said Douglas. "He says he wished he'd lived in the Stone Age."
"I wish he had too," said William.
"He says," said Henry, "that when things get too much for him, he likes to leave the horrors of civilization behind and make for the peace and solace of the open countryside."
"Dotty sort of thing he would say," said William. The four outlaws had just reached the old barn when suddenly Ginger said, "Gosh, who's this?" A strange figure was coming across the field. It was a short figure, dressed in a shapeless trailing coat, the face almost hidden by a thick black mop of hair. They gazed at it in bewilderment as it approached.
"Hello, William,"
said a small, shrill voice.
"Gosh," groaned William. "Violet Elizabeth Bott."
Violet Elizabeth removed the mop-like wig.
"Yes, it's me, William," she said. "I've run away from school."
"Run away?" said William.
"Yes," said Violet Elizabeth. "I don't like it. It's a nasty place, and they give you nasty food. Minth."
She contorted her small features into a grimace of disgust. Violet Elizabeth's parents had gone abroad, Mr. Bott on business and Mrs. Bott on a trip to Paris, and they had parked Violet Elizabeth at Rosemount School, a select boarding school for girls on the outskirts of the village.
"Minth, twice in 1 week," continued Violet Elizabeth. "The mistresses are nasty too. They're cross all the time."
"But what on earth?"
said William, pointing to the wig that she was now dangling in one hand.
"It's a disguise," said Violet Elizabeth proudly. "I stole it. It's a wig. It belongs to one of the big girls, and I stole it for my disguise so I could run away. And the coat belongs to one of the mistresses. I stole that for my disguise too."
They stared at her helplessly.
"Yes, but what are you going to do?" said William.
"Stay with you," said Violet Elizabeth simply. "You must hide me so that they can't find me."
"Well, we can't," said William indignantly.
"But you must, William. They're nasty people at that school. I wouldn't eat mince, and they said that I mustn't have anything else to eat till I'd eaten it, so I shall starve to death if you send me back."
She looked at him appealingly.
"You can't send me back to starve to death, William. It will be the same as murdering me, and if you try to take me back, I'll scream and I'll scream and I'll scream till I'm sick. I can."
William turned to the others.
"Gosh," he said, "what are we going to do with her?"
"Take her back," said Ginger. William gave an ironic snort.
"Oh, yes, screaming and yelling all down the road. That's a jolly good idea, I must say."
"She bites, too," said Douglas. "She's got teeth like daggers. She bit me once, and it took days to get well."
"It's a sort of moral problem," said Henry.
"What do you mean, moral problem?" said William.
"Well, she's sort of taken sanctuary with us."
"What's that?" said William. "Same as a bird sanctuary?"
"Well, yes, in a way," said Henry. "But it's more serious with humans. She's come and asked for sanctuary, and we've got to give it her. It'll be treachery to hand her over to her enemies. She's, well, she's trusted us, you see. She's taken sanctuary with us."
"Oh, yes, I suppose there's something in that," said William. "But we can't hide her up for the rest of our lives. And she's fussy about food. She'd start screaming and carrying on." "She's a sort of mixture of an orphan and a refugee," said Douglas. "It makes it jolly difficult."
Violet Elizabeth had tripped over her coat and fallen at William's feet. She put the wig on again, peering up at them through the tangle of dark hair.
"It's a lovely disguise, isn't it?" she said.
"Now listen, Violet Elizabeth," said William. "You're a mixture of an orphan and a refugee, same as Douglas says, and we can't keep you because we've nowhere to hide you, and we can't take you home because your mother's gone on a trip to Paris."
"The fair ground of Europe," said Henry. "That's what I once heard someone call it."
"Yes,"
said Violet Elizabeth with sudden bitterness.
"She's in Paris, writhing on roundabouts and swinging on swings at this fairground, and she doesn't care what happens to me. She just leaves me to be poisoned by mints and starved to death. I won't go back to her at all now, and it'll serve her right."
"Well, we can't go on keeping you for the rest of our lives," said William. "It'd be like that man what had to go about with an albatross tied round his neck."
Violet Elizabeth glowered at them through the forest of black hair.
"I'm not going to that nasty school," she said.
Then what could be seen of her face broke into a beaming smile.
I tell you what I'll do. I'll get myself adopted. I'm sick of school, and I'm sick of my own mother. I want a nice new school and a nice new mother, so you must get me adopted.
How could we? Said William.
Put a notice in the post office, said Violet Elizabeth. We got a nice new gardener that way, so I might get a nice new mother.
The outlaws hesitated. Well, better than just staying here, whispered William to Ginger. We'll get rid of her somehow. They reached the post office and stood for a minute outside examining the notices that were displayed in the window. Home wanted for lovable kitten. Young lady wanted to do light household work 2 mornings a week. They went in. It was empty except for the postmistress, who looked at them without interest. Well, she said, what can I do for you?
We want to put a card in the window, said Violet Elizabeth.
Well, where is it? Said the postmistress. We haven't got one, said William. If we tell you what we want, will you write it down? What is it?
Violet Elizabeth cleared her throat impressively.
Lovable young lady wants to be adopted by nice person.
All right, that's enough, said the postmistress. Now off you go, and no more of your nonsense.
We'll have to think of something else then,
said Violet Elizabeth when they reached the crossroads.
Well, we can't stay here, said Douglas. Anyone might come along and we'd all get into a row. Look, someone's coming now.
Mrs. Monks and Miss Carruthers were coming down the road, deep in conversation.
Quick, said William, diving into the overgrown ditch.
The others followed. The two women stopped at the crossroads and stood talking.
You see, said Miss Carruthers, this friend of mine, who shall be nameless, this friend of mine wanted to find a little girl to bring up as a companion for her own little girl, who's an only child and needs companionship. Well, I got in touch with someone who seemed ideal, a widower with a little girl of the right age. I got the interview all fixed up. This friend of mine, who shall be nameless, is staying at the Somerton Arms in Marley. Anyway, I was going to take the child to the interview there this afternoon. Then I heard from the widower by this morning's post that the whole thing has fallen through, and now I've been called to the sick bed of a dear aunt, and I have to rush off to the train. I tried to ring my friend up at the hotel, but couldn't get through to her. I wrote a note for the gardener to take, but he's not turned up. Well, there's nothing I can do about it now. It's so provoking.
I'm sorry I can't help, said Mrs. Monks, but the Women's Guild Committee's waiting for me, and I'm late already. Goodbye.
Oh, well, said Miss Carruthers with a sigh.
She stood irresolute for a moment. Suddenly she brightened. She'd caught sight of a boy's head in the ditch.
Boy,
she called. Slowly, William emerged.
Miss Carruthers had not lived in the neighbourhood long enough to distinguish one boy from another. Here was a boy, she felt, who could be trusted.
"Will you do something for me, boy?"
she said.
"Uh-huh," said William, guardedly.
Miss Carruthers took a note from her handbag.
"Will you go to the Somerton Arms at Marley and deliver this note for me? Here's sixpence for your trouble."
William crammed the note into his pocket and received the sixpence into a grubby palm.
"Thanks," he said, But
Miss Carruthers was already scurrying away. The other four climbed out of the ditch.
That's what I want to be, said Violet Elizabeth, beaming joyfully. I want to be the little girl's companion. I'll have a nice new friend and a nice new mother. It's just what I want. She'll be waiting for me now, and she'll never know I'm not the real one. Come on, let's go to Marley, quick.
They stared at her.
Well, it's a way of getting rid of her, said William.
We can just take her there and leave her.
He opened his hand. Look, she gave me sixpence.
You must buy me a lolly, then, said Violet Elizabeth, to stop me starving to death.
All right, said William. If we buy you a lolly, will you promise to go back to school straight away?
I'll think about it,
said Violet Elizabeth graciously.
Ginger ran back to the shops and returned with a lollipop.
Now will you go back to school? Said William, handing it to her.
No,
said Violet Elizabeth.
I said I'd think about it, and I've thought about it, and I've decided not to.
Violet Elizabeth had dropped her lollipop onto the road, but she picked it up and proceeded to lick the dust off it.
Look at her, said Ginger. Turns up her nose at mints and eats dust.
I don't mind the taste of dust, said Violet Elizabeth. It's quite clean dust, and I made up all that about the mints. I wanted to run away from school, so I made all that up about the mints to give me a reason for running away. It was clever of me, wasn't it?
You're a storyteller, said Douglas sternly.
I know I am, said Violet Elizabeth, with an air of modest pride. I'm a very good storyteller.
Oh, come on, said William. Let's take her to that place and get rid of her.
They trailed over the fields to Marley and the Somerton Arms.
I'm going to have a nice new mother,
said Violet Elizabeth complacently.
My own mother doesn't care for anything but riding on roundabouts in Paris, so I don't want her any more.
Mrs. Bott was not riding on roundabouts in Paris. She was sitting in her bedroom at the Somerton Arms, dressed up to the nines, awaiting her visitor. During the last few months, Mrs. Bott had been planning fresh manoeuvres to force her way into the ranks of the local aristocracy. The aristocracy had been to Paris. They came back with Paris outfits and Paris hats. Mrs. Bott had never been to Paris, so when Mr. Bott went to Holland on business and decorators had taken possession of the hall, she decided to seize the opportunity. But her thoughts had turned more and more frequently to Violet Elizabeth at Rosemount School. To judge from her letters, Violet Elizabeth was not happy at Rosemount School. Wandering through the Paris shops, Mrs. Bott came to the conclusion that the root of the trouble was the fact that Violet Elizabeth was an only child. What Violet Elizabeth needed was a little companion. She decided to move secretly. She wrote to Miss Carruthers, because Miss Carruthers was a newcomer to the village who could be trusted not to spread the news. She decided to leave Paris at once, to come home incognito, as it were, and stay quietly at the Somerton Arms till her husband had returned and the decorations at the hall were completed. Then she would blossom forth in all her Paris glory. She had had things done to her face and to her hair. She had bought a Paris dress and a Paris hat. She was wearing both hat and dress now as she sat in her bedroom in the Somerton Arms, awaiting the little companion. There was a knock at the door, and the manageress of the hotel entered, closing the door behind her. She looked pale and shaken.
"There's a child," she said. "At least I think it's a child. Something about you expecting her." "Oh, yes," said Mrs. Bott, moving the hat sideways. "I'm expecting her. Show her in."
She opened the door, and a small figure entered. The wig hid her face completely, and a lollipop dangled from it, inextricably entangled in the thick black hair. The coat followed like a bedraggled tail. Mrs. Bott gave an hysterical scream.
"Oh, go away, you horrible child," she cried. "I wouldn't let my Violet Elizabeth see you, even. It will kill her. Go away."
But at the same moment, Violet Elizabeth had also given an hysterical scream and heard not a word of this.
"I don't want you for my mother, you nasty woman. I want my own knife, mother. I want my own mummy. Go away, you nasty, horrid woman. If you don't go away, I'll scream and I'll scream and I'll scream."
Mrs. Bott stared at her. The voice was familiar. The scream was familiar. What she could see of that small, distorted face was familiar.
"Oh, my darling,"
she said, throwing herself on the floor beside Violet Elizabeth.
"Go away,"
screamed Violet Elizabeth again. Mrs. Bott's abrupt descent had not only displaced Violet Elizabeth's black wig, but had also displaced the Paris hat and hairdo, reducing her almost to her old self.
"Oh, Mummy," said Violet Elizabeth. "My own knife, Mummy."
They sat on the floor, clasped in each other's arms. And then Miss Golightly, headmistress of Rosemount School, entered. She had tracked her errant pupil to the Somerton Arms. Mrs. Bott rose to her feet.
"Miss Golightly," she said sternly, "you have a lot to explain."
Miss Golightly explained it. The flu epidemic had reduced the staff to half its normal numbers, and things had, she admitted, got a little out of hand. But that a pupil of Rosemount School should run away was unprecedented. She fixed a stony gaze on Violet Elizabeth. "And you, Violet Elizabeth," she said, "you have something to explain. Kindly explain it." Violet Elizabeth's small, sweet face wore a look of troubled innocence.
"It wasn't my fault," she said plaintively. "It was those horrid boys. They made me do it."
"Boys? What boys?" said Miss Golightly. The manageress had joined the group in the bedroom.
"There were four boys at the door," she said.
But the four boys were at the door no longer. They had heard fragments of the conversation, and they were following old French's example, leaving the horrors of civilization behind them and making for the peace and solace of the open countryside.